Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, many of us will have our lives touched by Alzheimer's or dementia through a loved one's experience. And a new book, Mam and Me, Living a Lifetime in a Day, is a really poignant account of two people bound by duty, love and choice. And in it, the author, Kieran J. Coote, draws together an ordinary day caring for his mother, Patricia, with memories of times past before her diagnosis of dementia. It is a beautiful book. And he's here. Kieran, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much,
Lovely
Claire.
To have Lovely you with us. I met your mother.
You
I
did.
Knew her. And we should give the background, because Father Tony Coote was your brother. Lots of people knew Tony. And it was through events that he was having, in the lead up to his death, there was a couple of lovely events for Tony and for motor neuron disease awareness. And she was there with you, always with the arm linked.
Yes, indeed, yeah. Yeah, she was. She was a great parent.
You were looking after her at that time, weren't you?
That was the start of it, Claire. Unfortunately, Tony's diagnosis and Mam's diagnosis were about the same time, start of February. So, yeah, I had my arm around her from the start, you know, as you need to do, you know.
You describe really well coming to terms or starting to notice that something was going wrong. Things like the gas being left on, the doors being left open. Tell us about that.
Mam's two sisters and brother had dementia and had passed from it. So I had been Mam's taxi driver for many years and had brought her to many visits to visit them. So on the periphery, I was always very aware of the symptoms and watching the illness develop. Mam started to have a few incidents. They were forgetful kind of things, as we all do. And then they were a little more pronounced. You know, the gas was left on, which she never did. The front door was left open. Too many briquettes on the floor, things like that. And I just had a good feeling. You know, I really had a good feeling something wasn't right. Mm-hmm. And I started to record the incidents. And that was really the start of... When I looked back on them, I started to see a pattern.
How did you know to do that, start writing them down?
Just an awareness that if I was going to have, I'm going to need assistance along the way, which you do need a lot of assistance, you know, particularly from the HSE, and which I got, and which was great. You do need to have a proper record of that.
Mm-hmm.
The HSE will tell you that just to be yourself, looking after your parents is not enough. There needs to be a reason. And by recording these incidents, I was able to say, look, we really do need help.
Yeah. There's one description in the book, which, I mean, there are lots of moments where you're turning the page and you can't not turn the page. But this particular instant where you took your mum to mass.
Yeah.
And
yes,
it went wrong. Describe that for people.
I will. You know, I brought mum to mass many times, but during as Mam's illness was developing, she was still going to mass on her own. She was in the ladies' club, she was in the choir, she was doing many, many things. But I used to bring her to the pro-cathedral, usually on a Saturday morning. And I brought her in and she asked me, was I coming in? I said, I'll be in a minute. And she didn't believe me, of course. And she was right. And I thought I'd wait outside. And I waited outside for about 20 minutes. And then I went in to get her. And when I went inside, she was actually, the church was empty. So panic immediately, where is she? And I checked the church several times. I was ran down the quays. I was up on O'Connell Street. About 30 minutes, looking for Mam.
Running.
And running around town. In April, with my coat on, because it's cold in Dublin in April. And I couldn't find her. And I eventually ended up looking through the window of Peter Marks on O'Connell Street, because Mam got her hair done every Saturday there. They thought I was going crazy, and I rang my neighbour Des and said, is there any chance he'd knock in and see his mam home? And he went out in his front garden and he said, there she is walking around the corner. I was like, okay, great. So I was hugely relieved and thought, what is going on here? So I went home and Des brought her in for a cup of tea and I went in and my mam never really got angry, but her eyes flashed with anger. She said, where were you, you know?
Right.
I came home and you weren't home. She'd completely forgotten that that I was waiting outside. She'd walked out of the church, got on the bus home, as she always did, and just arrived home. That was
so you knew then?
This was a big moment, yeah. Because I thought, this cannot go on. Because at the time I was working, I had a couple of jobs and I'm doing different bits and pieces, and Mum was being left on her own at certain times. Everything was fine, but this was really what if moment. I was talking to my friend Des after. Des works in the Manor Hospital, Des O'Neill, lovely man. And he really, statement of Des's was that you cannot do this from the outside. You have to see it from your mum's world, you know. And that was probably the final piece in the full turning into the experience, you know.
Yeah, but that seems to be a mantra then that you use throughout the care, trying to see what was happening from her perspective.
Yeah, yeah. It's key, I think. You can't do it from the outside. Yeah, you really have to get inside. The kind of experience I went through, it's different for everyone, of course, mm-hmm. you know. But you really do need to be looking through the other person's eyes. And you can do that. I mean, I had a very good relationship with Mam. We were good friends. We'd been living together for years. That's a long story. But
it's a big decision, isn't it? It's a big decision to say, I'm going to do this now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was really based on Mam being there for me in the big moments of my life. Simple as that. You know, when all doors were closed, Mam's door was open. And you know, for many of the bigger challenges in my life, she was there for mm-hmm. me. So it was a great opportunity, actually, to pay that back, you know.
Yeah, because she didn't have an easy life, and you give us some insights into that as well. You know, yeah. she toughed a lot out.
Yeah, just, God, the women of Ireland are tough, you know. But Mam was a child of the 40s. She was the youngest of 9 siblings. She started work at 14 as a legal secretary. She had to give up her job to get married, God love her. Which is just hard to believe at the moment, at this time. She had 5 sons, one who passed in childbirth, Alan. And then her marriage kind of broke up years later, and she was really the rock that reared the rest of us and supported the rest of us.
But even that, to get through, you know, bringing up a family at that time on your own, that was a big decision.
Yeah, yeah.
Big decision.
Back in the mid-70s, yes it was. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Tony had mentioned that before in his book, that he became kind of socially isolated, you know, because the control that was in, you know, being married was the main thing, and to be separated was almost taboo, you know. So she had to deal with that as well, you know, the social situation at the time. You know, thankfully that's...
And work and put bread on the table and all of that, and she
did
that
herself.
Yeah,
she had 2 jobs. Yeah, she was out... she had a job out in Fingus with some marvellous people out there, and she used to do a little bit of housework as well for people as well, you know. And then having to put up with 4 sons, I don't know how she did it.
Fair play to her.
And she didn't murder us either. she might have got away, but you know.
So did you feel then, when it came to a choice, because it is always, you do have a choice, you know, do I do this? Does somebody else in the family do it? Do we hand it over to somebody else? Do we put her into residential care? I'm sure you had all of those conversations with yourself and with others, and you said, no, I'm going to do this now.
Yeah, I have to say, the expression, Tournier, good into right intentions into right actions was something that I felt was important. When Mam, at the early stages, I actually didn't know what I was going to do. That's the truth. I knew I was going to do something. That was the intention, but I didn't know how I was going to do it, and that was the action. My aunties had, particularly our auntie Pauline, it had developed quite quick. She was a big, strong woman, and it was very difficult to deal with. And within a year, Pauline was in a nursing home. I saw that as a possibility for Mam, although I didn't want that, you know. I definitely didn't want that. And as Mam's diagnosis progressed and I got a grip of it a bit more, I realised, I thought I had the skill set to deal with this, you know. Mm-hmm. I've mentioned before, like, I've worked in the catering business all my life, and that biz, I still am. In Clonskay with Berman and Wallace there. We do little bits of work. But that skill set of doing things for other people really came to the fore there. And I was able to kind of look after Mam. And
but, you know, reading the book, you just have this zen patience that not everybody has. I mean, did you have to find that, or is that there in you?
It wasn't always there, and I didn't want to put that in the book. You know, it's you do lose your patience, you know. But no, I'd be quite patient. I have four daughters. That teaches you patience, amongst other things, you know. But yeah, to be patient. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is something you really develop, you know.
Using the example of making the smoothie in the morning with all of these ingredients, and you've obviously done a lot of research on what nutrition Patricia needed at the time, and then trying to get her to drink it just really was really tough.
Yeah, it's amazing. You wouldn't believe. And I've spoken to other people about this before, and they said, my mother would not drink a glass of water. She would drink 10 cups of tea, wasn't a glass of water. But tea is not necessarily that good for you, you know. It kind of comes through. So Mam had... thankfully, Mam was on no medication. There was two anti-dementia tablets that she was given that weren't really working, and multivitamin tablets, which are another kettle of fish. But I kept giving Mam the tablets, because if she took half a tablet, she'd have to drink some of the smoothie. And that was the vehicle to get it in.
You just wanted to get the nutrition into her.
Yeah. I had checked with the doctors. They said the tablets won't do her any harm, and the vitamins are the vitamins, you know. So... I used that as a vehicle to get the smoothies into her. But it was so like dealing with the kids when they're younger, you know. Oh, go on, cajoling her, you know.
Yes.
And of course, it's your mother, you know, and she's looking at me like I'm 5 years old, you know. You know what I mean? And I think if she could have, she probably would have given me a slap here and there, you know. But yeah, it was kind of using kind of little techniques. I think being a parent was a big help, because unfortunately the nature of Mam's illness is a cycle, and they do start to return to kind of infancy, you know, kind of challenges.
Going back again to patients, the description of taking her for a walk and the getting in and out of the wheelchair. Yeah. I mean, I was reading that and I could get a sense of how difficult that was. And I'm sure that wasn't the only incident where, you know, you felt frustration.
Yeah, I think with patients, you know, frustration holds patients' hand. You know, they are. Two sides of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I think it was. Frustration is a build-up. I think that about the thing with the illness, it's like with the kids, their inability for children to understand you makes you frustrated. Now, if you could picture that with your mum, that's where it is.
Yeah.
The repeat exercise, the repetition of things, I mean, that gets very frustrating.
Yeah, and we'll just maybe describe that walk for people so they understand where we're going with it. So you went through all the preparation, you were going to go out for a lovely drive and a little bit of a walk, and then what happens when you get
there? Well, we arrive out in Howth, as we've done hundreds of times, walks and drives every afternoon. Mam would say to me, we go for a spin. And so we're in the car, Mam's wheelchair, and... Mam's favourite son, everyone knows, our dog Scamp, you know. That's the truth. And Mam's wheelchair and myself. So we head out to Howth. We park in Howth Harbour. It's a sunny day, but it's breezy, you know. So I have all the bits and pieces with me. I take Mam's folded chair out. I set it up. There's a particular way of getting Mam out of the car, reversing her into the chair, and she's in the chair. We put the legs of the feet for the chair in, that kind of technique. And the dog on the lead. So we head up and we're walking up the pier. There's me, the dog and Mam, you know.
Lovely so far.
Walking across, yes. And we get about 50 yards and Mam says, I want to get out of the chair. I says, okay, no problem, Mam. Walking's good for, of course. Brakes on, dog to the side. There's a particular technique of getting Mam up out of the chair standing. You have to spin the chair around, try not to fall over the dog. And then we're all moving forward again, which we do. It takes a couple of minutes, but you get used to it, you know. And 50 yards down the road, Mam said, I want to sit in the chair again. I thought, okay. So I put Mam in the chair. You can tell already the tense is coming in my voice telling the story. But anyway, so I put Mam back in the chair. And we go another 100 yards. And Mam says, I want to get out of the chair. And I said to Mam, I will hang on there a little bit. We go a bit further. And Mam said, I want to get out of the chair loudly. And people looked over, so I thought, okay, we stopped. Now, at this stage, we're behind the pier wall, so the wind has dropped, the temperature's gone up, and I'm starting to feel the heat a bit, you know. Get Mam out of the chair. We go down another 50, 60 yards. I want to sit down again. And I'm saying, well, you don't keep walking, it's good for your leg. I want to sit down. Someone else looks over. And this woman said to me, do you want a hand to put your Mam in the chair, you know? And everyone's just being nice. But now, all of a sudden, this development. The temperature's rising. I'm thinking, okay,
your nerves are jangling at this stage.
I'm really at this at the edge. Or heading towards the edge. And the thing is, I could feel it. it's very hard to control it, you know, once it's in you. So we put Mam back in the chair and we go down another 100 yards and the same thing happens again. And of course, my voice is being raised. I'm saying, I'll sit in the chair, you'll be all right. I've gone from cajoling to telling. This is how it manifests. And someone else, oh, do you want me to give you a hand getting your mother out of the chair? And I could feel people looking at me kind of saying, oh, you think he'd get his mum out of the chair? Or you think he'd let his mum sit down? And the funny thing is that when you look at that situation, everyone looks at the person in the chair, but there's two people involved. And the carer is going through as much as the... And I learned through that experience not to, you know, you try not to judge, you're judging to two people involved, you know. But basically, at the end of, and we were only halfway down the pier, I just couldn't take it anymore. And I nearly fell over the dog. He went to the loo on the spot. Everyone's looking at me there. Yeah, to try and pick that up.
Look, that's all part of it. Yes, and I think that's what's going to be helpful for people who read this book, who are in this situation or have been in this situation. These are all normal emotions to feel, normal experiences to have.
Very much so. They're as sure as you can feel you're doing a good job, you feel you're doing a bad job. They really are in tandem. Because other people will tell you you're doing a good job, but it's what you think. It's mm-hmm. how you feel about it, you know. Mm-hmm. In the end of the day, it's you and Mam, or as I said, Mam and me.
Do you think she knew about Tony, about his illness and his death?
No, she didn't. It never registered with Mam. I mean, Mam had met Tony. We brought Mam over to Tony. I mean, she was there at the opening of his walk in Letterkenny. I brought Mam up. She asked me, what's motor neuron? She didn't understand. So that was the only, if I could say, the only good thing about Mam's illness. She was not aware Tony had motor neuron disease. She didn't understand it. And thankfully, because that would have killed her. Mm. She loved Tony.
But you often walked in and she was holding the book that he had written.
Yes.
What you can.
Yes. Tony, of course, had his book, Live While You Can, you know, but it sent us to the first edition where the photographs inside it. So Mam would be thumbing through the pages, and possibly reading little bits, but then she went to just looking at the photographs. And then she kind of went just holding the book. And the book was always beside her bed, you know, the particular blue cover. And she would notice that. And, you know, she always liked to have it in her line of sight, you know.
But you just don't think that she knew
no.
he was gone?
When Tony passed, Claire, when we were going over to the removal, I had to go in and tell Mam that Tony had died. And I told her. And she went, oh, that's terrible. And then we went. And the next morning, when we got up for the funeral, I had to tell her again because she'd forgotten. So that really is part of the illness, is the forgetfulness. It's just hard. It's so hard to imagine someone's forgotten things, you know. I used to try and explain things with Mam about the book, about motor neurons and Tony. And then I decided I'd just leave Mam with it. Whatever part Mam had inside her of relationship with Tony, I decided I'd just let her have that. Okay. It didn't matter.
And she's no longer with us, of course, herself. We should say that.
No, she passed away on Halloween night on the 31st, you know, at home in her own bed, which was the goal.
That's what she wanted.
Where she was born, there was fireworks outside the window. And I'd like to think that she went into the next life thinking them fireworks were for her.
What harm.
And yes.
Listen, we're coming to the end, but I just want to say to people that I really think reading this, that it's not so much a guide, but maybe a balm for people who are going through this, who are caring for somebody. Was that your aim?
It was originally a record of a day spent caring. Cathartic, really. Then I wanted to add the other element of the book, the memoir about Mam, to give it context. And as I was writing through the day spent caring with Mam, alternating with Mam's life, it started to come some insights and different pieces of information, the practical things you need to do, the emotional depths that you might have to go to. And I thought if anyone read it, picked it up and read it, and got anything from it, I think that would serve the purpose of the book.
Yeah,
and of course, Mam's immortalised, you know. As they say, you know.
Well, thank you so much for coming in.
Could I just mention our launch?
Do.
Sorry,
go ahead.
Claire. We're doing a book launch in Mount Marion Parish Centre on Tuesday evening at 6:30. You're all very welcome, including yourself, of course.
Right.
Could I just say one last...
Tony's place,
That's
of course,
Tony's Parish, excuse the expression. And the last thing, could I just say, Claire, My auntie Kathleen passed away 2 years, almost to the day, and she'd be 99 today. Today's her birthday, and I just want to be shout out to my cousins.
Remember her as well. Well, yeah. The book is called Mam and Me, Living a Lifetime in a Day, and it's by Kieran J. Coote. Thank you very much for coming in. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.